From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Today is December 15th, the height of the holiday shopping season. Just 4 days till Hanukkah, 10 days till Christmas, 11 to Kwanzaa. It's actually 12 days till Louis Pasteur's birthday. In each tradition, a time for stories and gift-giving. So grab a pen and paper. Our book reviewer, Alan Chews, has some suggestions that will bring both into your home this year.
For lovers of the novel, there's only one book this season that comes close to being the perfect gift. It's the new English-language version of Don Quixote and shows off veteran translator Edith Grossman working at the top of her powers, beginning with the famous, wonderfully resonant opening of Cervantes' classic novel.
Somewhere in La Mancha, in a place whose name I do not care to remember, a gentleman lived not long ago, one of those who has a lance and ancient shield on a shelf and keeps a skinny nag and a greyhound for racing.
If the story of Don Quixote and his sidekick Sancho Panza is one of the greatest symphonies between book covers, maybe the best short stories are like beautiful chamber music. The early stories of John Updike contain over 100 stories, dating from 1953 to 1975. I don't think it puts too much of a burden on Updike's early fiction to say that listening to him read it, in this instance, the opening lines of his 1973 story titled Daughter, Last Glimpses Of, is like listening to a young musical genius at work.
Just before she went away to live with the red-bearded harpsichord maker, our daughter asked us how to jitterbug. She had found these old Glenn Miller records in the closet. Eileen and I were embarrassed to tell her we didn't know how. Though the jitterbug had been of our era, it was an era of the survival of the fittest, and for every Jack and Jill triumphantly trucking and twirling on the gymnasium floor to the local version of the big band sound, there was a clutch of Eileen's and Jeffrey's slumping enviously against the padded wall, or huddling in the bleachers, wondering how it was done, wondering if anyone who knew how would ever invite them to dance.
The voices you hear in Stuart Dybeck's new story collection come from post-World War II Chicago, where the writer grew up. The book is called I Sailed with Magellan, and in the story titled Song, Dybeck's voice fairly well sings off the page.
Once I was a great singer. Caruso Jr., they called me, and Little Derbingle. Crooners like Bing Crosby and Sinatra were still big in those days. My repertoire included Clang, Clang, Clang Went the Trolley, the song behind my ambition to become a streetcar conductor. I knew the nameless tune my mother sang when we waited for the L. Down by the station, early in the morning, see the little puffer billies all in a row. And my Uncle Lefty had taught me a version of Popeye the Sailor Man that went, I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. I live in a garbage can. I eat all the junk and smell like a skunk. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man, I am. But none of those was the song for which I was famous, the song requested over and over. They'd hoist me onto the bar where I'd carefully plant my feet among the beer bottles, steins, and shot glasses, and taking a breath of whiskey air, belt out, Old Man River.
I Sailed with Magellan is a lovely collection of lyrical pieces, loosely tied together, about coming of age, working class, and aware. Something you can give to anyone who cares about modern short fiction. And from the pages of Boris Fishman's anthology Wild East, Stories from the Last Frontier, more lively new fiction, all about the experience of living in contemporary Eastern Europe, which means drinking and loving and smoking and fighting and storytelling. You can nicely catch the flavor of the book when you listen to Fishman reading the opening of The Condor by Sarajevo writer Miljenko Jergovic, the story of a Croatian storyteller with a big mouth who chokes up when he's captured by Serbian soldiers.
Izet was what they call an Eglin Effendi, a brilliant talker. He could talk nonstop from dusk to dawn. One story flowed into another, one event turned into the next. Often he'd use the day's events to begin a story that would range across whole centuries and finally return to the price of meat or some gossip about a chap called Hido, who led a ram across Mount Jahorina just before the animal sacrifice of Bayram, right through the Serb positions until he reached the Visegrad gate, where he was hit by a UN armored truck, I swear to God, and thrown into a ditch while the ram was killed instantly. There was no end to Izet's stories, just as there's no end to time, the past, or the future. But they were never dull, and they usually had a message or a moral, and were seldom erratic. A tiny narrative thread kept you tied to the story and forced you to listen, even if it meant that you had to go hungry or without drink. Or that your life as a whole became a tense silence in which things only mattered if they could be described by a storyteller.
Storytelling is everything in Maxine Hong Kingston's The Fifth Book of Peace, a singular melange of memoir, fiction, and reportage. The book concerns the manuscript of a novel that Hong Kingston lost to a California wildfire in the early 90s when her house burned down, and the parallel she notices between her work and ancient Chinese texts.
1,000 years ago, on the Silk Road in western China, the mayor of Dunhuang ordered books burned to keep them out of the hands of the invading Shaoshan tribe. Heroic readers saved 20 horseloads of books. Recently, in the Dunhuang caves, were found 25 manuscripts of music for pipa lute and the little barbarian reed pipe. And I have heard that it is possible that a lost book of peace was among the books taken away on horseback.
And from another long-lost story.
They buried their children and moved on. Gravestones at the foot of Register Cliff in eastern Wyoming give poignant reminder of a scene reenacted many times on the Oregon Trail.
That's historian Colin G. Calloway reading from his well-researched narrative history, One Vast Winter Count.
Parents interred their little ones at the trail side, erected tiny grave markers, and pressed on with broken hearts. It was a common tragedy as pioneers struggled to make new lives for themselves, but it was an old scene in the West. Indian pioneers had moved into and across the West long before Europeans arrived. 12,000 or 13,000 years before the Oregon Trail, parents buried two children on a tributary of the Yellowstone River near present-day Wilsall, Montana. They covered the bodies in red ochre and interred them with more than 100 artifacts to help the children on their journey to the next world. Then they moved on.
Good reading for long winter nights, this saga of the native people of the American West in the centuries leading up to the Lewis and Clark expedition. For the poetry lovers on your list, I want to recommend The Complete Poems of Kenneth Rexroth, the California poet who died in 1982 in his late 70s and who's buried in a grave overlooking the Pacific. Rexroth's probably best known as the father of the Beat Generation. These poems reveal that great beauty lies beyond that cliché.
Late night, coming back to Melbourne from a party on the Kangaroo Plains.
Kenneth Rexroth reading his poem The Family from a 1974 recording courtesy of the Poetry Center at San Francisco State.
We stopped a car by a black pool. The air is immobile, crystalline. I get out, light a match, and study my star map. I blow out the match, and overhead and before and below me, doubled in the unmoving water, the million stars come on that I have never seen before and will never see again. And there are the two daughter universes of my universe, the Magellanic Clouds, two phosphorescent amoebas overhead, and two in the bottomless water.
The Family, included in The Complete Poems of Kenneth Rexroth. And now, for fans of Tolkien and Harry Potter, I'd like to suggest Aragon, a fantasy novel by one of the youngest members of America's writing family, Montana prodigy Christopher Paolini. Now only 19 years old, Paolini began writing this novel when he was 15 and completed it after his graduation from high school. It's about the heroic adventures of a young country boy and his friend Saphira, a young dragon. Come fly with them.
Pure joy radiated from Saphira as she climbed into the sky. She loved this freedom to go anywhere. When they were high above the ground, she looked back at Aragon. He saw himself as she did, hanging on to her with a blank look. He could feel her body strain against the air, using updrafts to rise. All her muscles were like his own. He felt her tail swinging through the air like a giant rudder to correct her course. It surprised him how much she depended upon it. Their connection grew stronger until there was no distinction between their identities. They clasped their wings together and dived straight down like a spear thrown from on high. no terror of falling touched Aragon, engulfed as he was in Saphira's exhilaration. The air rushed past their face, their tail whipped in the air, and their joined minds reveled in the experience.
A book I think young readers will really enjoy comes from the novelist Chitra Divakaruni. She wrote The Conch Bearer for her two young sons, this story of a quest to return a magical conch shell to a sacred valley high in the Himalayas. Divakaruni describes that magical object midway through the book.
It was a tiny conch shell, such as a child might pick up on a seashore, small enough to fit in his palm, so delicate that it seemed to be formed from the petals of jasmine flowers. And yet an enormous force throbbed from it, toward him and into him, warming him and making him light-headed with happiness. There was music all around him, the sweetest music, as though the stars had come down from the sky and crowded into the room.
Stars and legends and the not-so-famous crowd into Annie Leibovitz's arresting new book of photographs called American Music. All here in one long collage, the grin on the face of the late blues piano player A.B. Boogaloo Ames from Athens, Georgia. Dolly Parton spread out on the grass like a Tennessee country Molly Bloom. A two-page spread of the New Orleans Neville brothers and their families. Joni Mitchell, lost in dreams with a cigarette. Nora Jones, lost in thought. The lush lips of blues singer Etta James. The weathered face and body of Iggy Pop. John Bon Jovi from my hometown of Perth Amboy, New Jersey, posing in his white undershorts, the ladies of the Mount Moriah Missionary Baptist Church Choir, in their white Sunday dresses. All these images and sounds, some of my favorite things for this holiday season.
Once again, here are Alan Chew's holiday book recommendations. Edith Grossman's translation of Don Quixote.
John Updike, The Early Stories.
Stuart Dybeck's I Sailed with Magellan.
Boris Fishman's anthology, Wild East, Stories from the Last Frontier.
The Fifth Book of Peace by Maxine Hong Kingston.
Colin Calloway's One Vast Winter Count.
The Complete Poems of Kenneth Rexroth.
Aragon by Christopher Paolini.
The Conch Bearer by Chitra Divakaruni.
And from Annie Leibovitz, American Music. And if you're driving at the moment, don't worry. We've put this list on our website, npr.org.